Okay, I'm going to begin.
Once again, my name is Yoshua Grunstein, as all you know, and thank God I'm happy to be back. What I want to speak about today is a very simple issue, and that is what happens when you've learned the conclusion of Jewish law, halacha, in the books, and yet the Jewish people don't do that. What should be our approach? So let's look at the first example in order to make this tangible. Many of you have celebrated Simchas Torah, and you know and I know that Simchas Torah is the day in which we celebrate every violation of Jewish law possible. There is almost nothing that we do on Simchas Torah that's in accordance with Jewish law. We add aliyahs galore, when we usually don't do that on Yom Tov. We lane at night, and we don't lane at night at all throughout the year. And here's one of the many violations on Simchas Torah. So we're celebrating the Torah, says the Shulchan Aruch on the right side of the page, if a Torah is in transit, meaning you're moving the Torah from here to there, everyone around should stand up. If it's on the bima, it's not mobile, then you don't have to stand up. What do we do in shuls on Simchas Torah? So people are holding the Torah, they're walking around the bima or they're dancing. Not everyone in the shul is dancing, so what are they doing? They're sitting down. So all year long we stand up for the Torah, and yet, on Simchas Torah, everyone's sitting. More than that, says the Taz, "Begam mizman kishasefer Torah munachat ba'arot hakodesh, apo kishu patuach." Namely, you're allowed to sit down when you open the ark, even though the Sefer Torah is in the ark, because it's not mobile. It's not mobile. Ela, Rav, ha'olam osin kederach kavod la'amod kechol sha'aron ha'kodesh patuach ve'ein chiyuv batabar. Says the Taz that every time on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, then you open the ark, there's an announcement in the synagogue, in the shul, please stand up, or time to rise. You don't have to stand up if the Sefer Torah is in the ark. So what do we do on Simchas Torah? In Simchas Torah, when we open the ark, everyone stands up, even though they don't have to. And when the Torah is actually not mobile, when we dance with it, everyone's sitting down, or at least a segment of the synagogue is sitting down. People that don't want to dance, the party poopers are sitting down. How can that be? Violation number two. Let's go down to the bottom. Sorry.
So when it comes to the hakafot, everybody is standing.
Yes. Unless on Sukkot it's less of a problem because the Sefer Torah is actually not mobile. It's stationary on the bima.
Yeah, but it's held.
It's held, but it's actually on the bima. If it's held upright, there's a machloket if you need to stand up. There's many that say you don't need to. So Sukkot is less of a problem, but Simchas Torah seems to be a big violation of this law. Going down to the bottom of the sheet, the second to last example. When does a fast day end? A minor fast day. So the Gemara says, Kol ta'anit she'in lo shaka ala l'chamayin na ta'anit, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins that means that until it's dark, you cannot finish the fast day. That's the way we paskin the halacha. So on any sheet, anywhere in the world, it will say the fast ends when it gets dark. Knowing when Shabbos ended yesterday, and knowing that Tisha B'Av is not tomorrow but 2 months away, I feel terrible for you. Knowing how Tisha B'Av is going to end. As a matter of fact, let's forget about Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a 24-hour fast, that we're like used to that. She lost her times. That is terrible. But, and you're ready for this? Comes along the Nachal Eshkol on the left side of the page. Nachal Eshkol is a perush on a book called the Sefer HaEshkol. So Nachal Eshkol says, Sha'alani harab the Stockholm. The rabbi in Stockholm asked me, have you been to Stockholm? So if you think you're suffering here in the UK, then times that by two. Stockholm on Tisha B'Av is awful. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is second to awful. He says as follows, Al Minagam Sham, this is their custom. Sha'ochlin b'yitzayin b'tamuz, tet v'chetzi sha'a achar chatzot. They eat at 9:30 p.m. 9:30 p.m. in Stockholm has no significance halachically. It's an arbitrary time that they picked. And the rabbi in Stockholm says, I come to the community, I know the law, and they say, 9:30 p.m., the fast is over. How can that be? And the Nachum Eshkol tries to knock some sense into it. But forgetting about his justification for a moment, the bottom line is, another example where the common custom is against the code of Jewish law. There's a conflict between the books and what the Jewish people do. Now, I want to be clear. These are not Jewish people that don't care about Jewish law. These are from Jews that care about the fast days, are fasting, and yet they're finishing the fast early. These are Jews that want to be happy on Simchas Torah because they love the Torah, and yet they're not standing up the whole time that the Torahs are not mobile. Give me the last example on the table.
Is our waiting 3 hours between meat and milk an example of this?
No. Because waiting 3 hours between meat and milk, the Gemara never says you need to wait 6 hours.
Right.
The Gemara never even says you need to wait an hour. It doesn't say you need to wait 3 hours. The Gemara says that you wait from meal to meal. What does that mean? That's already different customs. The basic din de rabbanan, the basic rabbinic commandments, is an hour. Beyond an hour, it's already custom. So whether it's 5 or 3 is not necessarily a violation. But the violation has to do with you. You're a Kohen. My dear friend is a Kohen. Just your name for the recording.
Dovber.
Dovber. So Dovber is a Kohen. Says the Rambam about Dovber. Every morning, I'm a Jew, my name is Yeshua, I wake up, I have an obligation to wash my hands, I have an obligation to daven, to put on tefillin. Dovber has one additional obligation. The Rambam says, Levarech Kohanim et Yisrael Bechol Yom. A Kohen has to bless the Jewish people every day. That is a biblical commandment. That's not an optional commandment, like if you want to eat meat, you have to slaughter it Jewishly, but rather it's an obligation, like putting on tefillin. When was the last time you did a Chiddush there?
Yom Tov.
Comes along the Ramon. Rav Moshe Isserich. This is the posek of the Ashkenazic Jewry. In the Code of Jewish Law, that brings the laws of Duchenin, never once mentions, even on a side note, that you don't Duchen every day. And he brings a bunch of customs that have to do with Duchenin. The first on the sheet is that someone that's not married doesn't Duchen. Because a married person is not in Simcha. He's not yet happy. Only when he finds a wife will he be happy. And you need to be happy to Duchen. Now, I will now open parentheses. It doesn't say anywhere. Not in the biblical Torah. Not in the Torah Shabbat Peder, Torah, the oral Torah. Not in the Gemara, not in the Toskir. That you need to be happy to fulfill the mitzvah of Duchen. Now, close the parentheses. Because the Ramah said you have to be happy, he's on a roll, he continues. Oh, since you need to be happy, look where the three dots are. Nahagu bechol nidinot elu. All Ashkenazic Jewry has a minhag. She'ein nosim kapayim, you don't duchen. Ela b'yom tov. Why? Because as shuyim b'simchav yom tov. People are happy on the holidays. They're not necessarily happy every week on Shabbos, but when Yom Tov comes, you can rest assured that they are happy. And then he adds, we only duchen on Yom Tov at Musaf. Not like an Israel shop for Stan Musaf. Even though the law would dictate, you should duchen at the first possible time, Shachris.
And then Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah.
On Simchas Torah, many shuls duchen at Shachris because the Kohanim are going to drink at the Kiddush, and then they can't duchen.
So that's another thing with Simchas Torah we do.
We do a little different, yes. But that actually is in accordance with Jewish law. The question is, how the rest of the Yomim told him. Usually when you have a mitzvah, you do it at the first possible time. So Hallel, we do it at the first possible time. Why don't we wait till Musaf? Says the Ramah, my assumption is you have to be happy. So someone that's single doesn't do it. Only on Yom Tov. Where are the Jews? The happiest on Yom Tov. Says the Ramah, at Musaf. Why? You ready for this? Everyone sitting down? I quote, "Sheyotzim as mi beit haKnesset v'yistachu b'simchat Yom Tov," because the Jews are about to finish davening, and they love to have be. They don't like davening, but they like to be in a situation that they have davened, and they're the happiest brisket Muslim. They know in 5 minutes they're going to eat the brisket. 10 minutes till the meal. And then they're happy. Then the Kohanim can put up their hands and duchen. My friends, this is a huge violation of Jewish law. This is like saying, don't put on tefillin, because we decided that on cloudy days, people are not happy, and they shouldn't put on tefillin. Only when it's sunny, you should put on tefillin. So we just gave three examples where the conclusion in the books is clear cut. There's no machloket. There's no difference of opinion. The conclusion is A, and we do B. Starting from the beginning of the page, we said you're supposed to stand up when the Torah is in mobile, and we don't on Simchas Torah. The Aruch HaShulchan acknowledges the Lo Nahagum Kamer. Number two, in Stockholm, they finished the fast at 9:30 p.m., which corresponds to nothing. And you're supposed to finish the fast when it's dark. And number three, the duchening outside of Israel. So, what do we do when we have these conflicts? Turning the page over to the other side, I'd like to suggest two points of view. Now, there's 4 points of view on the page because my wife and I have a deal. She always makes more food than we need, and I always give you more sources than I'm going to talk about. However, that's for you to look at the two middle opinions. The first opinion and the fourth opinion is the one I want to talk about today. The first opinion is, well, if the Jewish people are not doing the right thing, correct them. Come along, you're the new rabbi, or you're a knowledgeable woman, whatever you might be, and you say, hey, you're making a mistake. We've done this way for generations, rabbi. Well, you've done wrong.
It's interesting with the duchening. The minhag here was not to duchen even on
Shabbos.
Yes. They changed that now.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
You know why? Because the minhag was to say a huge prayer called Hatavat Chalom, to ask God to nullify bad dreams for you during the duchen.
Yeah, the response. Yeah.
Now that is not allowed to be said on Shabbos because we don't petition God on Shabbos. We don't say requests.
Yeah, so we don't do all the lie.
And we don't do the lie. We're there for that.
Yes.
Because you make petition, they didn't want you to duchen. Also, a crazy way of thinking of things. Anyway,
but with the exception used to be Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur, yes.
Interesting.
Interesting. That makes sense. Because on Yom Kippur, on Shabbos, we petition a lot. Except for Avinu Malkeinu, where everything else is in there. That makes sense. Anyway, suffice it to say, this happens to be a very interesting point of view. The Rambam says as follows. Once upon a moon in the morning, davening started with Al Tilat Yadayim. People at home would wake up, wash their hands, wipe their hands with a towel, maybe use the toilet, come to synagogue 15, 20 minutes later, and then, and only then, make the bracha on the Tilat Yadayim. The Rambam's asked, this is the minhag, is this correct? What does the Rambam say without qualms? He bracha levatala. This is a blessing in vain. You gotta put your foot down, you gotta nullify this minhag. The ein mashkichin b'zeh b'minhag. When there's a violation of Jewish law, the common custom is useless, means nothing. Disregard it. He's not alone. Many others have said the same thing. The Prima Govan says that those that switch their tefillin from the Rashi tefillin to the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin during the Chazorat HaShatz, when they're supposed to listen and say Amen and not do other things, says they're doing wrong. I don't want to listen to them. I don't want to hear their justifications. When they're wrong, they're wrong. Comes along the Chazon Ish, which is 20th century already, and says, with due respect to the custom of the Jewish people, you're going to pass the halacha like the Jewish people? The Jewish people who, and I quote word for word from the Hebrew, Hanakat Balataam, She'inam Tiktakim B'Diburam, they slander. These are the people that pass the halacha, they slander. They're not careful B'Masa'am U'Matanam when they do business. U'B'Diktukim Mitzvot, they're not careful when they do mitzvot. The Jewish people, they're the ones that are going to tell us what to do. Only the rabbis decide. So the first point of view is very simple. If the Jewish people are making a mistake, what do? Correct them. I don't care what the custom was. Correct them. However, as you can well imagine, for this point of view, turn the coin around, and there's a second point of view. And that's Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, two great gedolim of the 20th century. Rav Moshe Feinstein died in 1986. I was in grade 3, or year 3, as you call it. And it was a day I will never forget, because my teachers in school were all depressed. And I was an inquisitive kid, so I asked my teacher, why are you depressed? And he said, Rav Moshe died. Which immediately, John, I said, who's Rav Moshe? I wish I would have told him I'm a Buddhist that went to church, because the screaming and yelling he did to me that day, how don't you know where Moshe is? I'll never forget. So you can well imagine that from that day on, Bill Bear, what did I do? I got to learn who Rav Moshe was. Rav Moshe Feinstein died in 1986, premier posik. He's the one that whoever doesn't makbid on Chol of Yisrael basically is relying on him. He says as follows. Someone wrote him a letter. And they said, you know, in our Siddur, it says that on various days of the year, you add things, you subtract things. So on Tu B'Shvat, you don't say Tachanun, and on Pesach, you add Ya'al and Yabal, and on this day, you do this. All of a sudden, with all the Hebrew dates, there's one English date. Can you tell me what it is?
4th of December.
What's the 4th of December?
The
Tein Bracha. The Tein Bracha, the Tein Talumata. Why is there an English date? We go like 60 days after the beginning of the season in Babylonia, today in Iraq. Very strange that we do that. We don't go by what we need here in the UK when the rain season begins, but by Iraq. Someone wrote Rav Moshe a letter, and this is what it said. Everyone's making a mistake. Let's correct them. This is Rav Moshe's response. My friends, these are words that I have put as my screensaver for a while, but I still have a screensaver. Now I have a new computer, and I can't get it back on. But I used to have it as a screensaver. Agdim Tchila Klal Gadol. I want to tell you the most cardinal rule. Asher korel davar shenu hagim kol Yisrael b'far talumata b'chul, shehu shkaga, that you call what all the Jews around the diaspora start saying the Tein Talumata on December 4th, a mistake. V'nimza shekhol torato choshev, and therefore you think shehu gadol yoter, you're bigger, mikol rabotenu, or mishonim v'achronim. All the rabbis, the medieval rabbis, the rabbis from, say, the 16th century and on, you're bigger than them. They all davened in shuls that did A, but you're telling me in the 20th century they're all mistaken. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, look at the bold letters, Yimchol Likvot Tarato. You know what that means in rabbinic literature? Excuse me. That's like saying, with all due respect. I forgot your name. Adele, what happens when you say to someone with all due respect? Or the next few words, you're about to disrespect them. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, with all due respect, Hu Yehurta Yitarta Apachshotke. It is absolutely haughty to think this way. It is the height of being arrogant to think this way. The kol shekein shelomar v'lichtovkein, and even more so to say so and to write so. Ve'yedak kol torato, may you understand shekol ma shechazina chosim achorat klal gadol b'Yisrael ein ol davar talut. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'll say it outside, anything that a big chunk of the Jewish people do is not a mistake. And absolutely, you have to assume what I call the presumption of righteousness. What does that mean? If they do it, it must be correct. They must have something to rely on. They must have some rabbi out there that told them this is what they're supposed to do. And therefore, instead of saying you're making a mistake, says Rav Moshe, Tzarich Limtzol Tam L'Amano Hagim Kein. Look for a reason why this is correct. In other words, when you see a custom that's against what you call Jewish law, your assumption should be not they're making a mistake, but rather they're correct and I didn't learn well enough. Or they're correct, we have to find a justification for it.
Can I ask you?
Yes.
We always put in much of a ruach.
Yeah.
And the father put in, certainly in the UK, Morid Atal.
Correct.
After Pesach.
And the Ashkenazim don't.
Yeah. Is there a reason?
I don't know why the Spartans do it. I can guess that Morin Hatal is a very good idea for the following scenario. On Shmini Atzeret, when we change back to Mashiach HaRuach, if you say Morin Hatal, you don't have to correct yourself. Meaning, if you said nothing, you have to repeat the bracha. If you said Morin Hatal, you don't have to. So it's a good way to get around it. But there must be better reasons.
And on a daily basis.
Right, on a daily basis, I believe that just like we daven on Shmini Atzeret for Tfilat Geshem, on Pesach we do Tfilat Tal, so why not?
Why not say it every day?
That's probably why in Israel, even Ashkenazim actually say Morin Hatal. I'm not sure why the Ramah said not to say it. That is the Shita of the Ramah. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, if you find something strange, assume they're correct. We're talking about from Jews that care about Jewish law.
This is now becomes a problem because everybody will say they might start with the assumption, well, obviously they're not so frum, and therefore, you know, so you've got a problem now. I mean, you had a possibly, I don't know, a more homogeneous Jewish world in the past. I don't know if that's true or not.
Let's now go to the second person and you'll see why he's not alone. Many have said this, but he's not alone. Allow me to quote to you something that someone showed me on Shabbos when I gave this year. In Motzei Shabbos, which is very late here in the UK, he opened up the Code of Jewish Law and showed me the Ramah says it. We're going to get back to it in a moment, but the Ramah says that in various communities they make noise during the Megillah reading, during Haman. And he says there, never question a minhag, even if you think they're violating Jewish law. Quote from the Ramah. Comes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, died in 1994. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I was at his funeral, and says as follows. The Jewish people have an ancient minhag on Shabbos to make something called ayir mitzvah. Do you know what that is? Eggs and onions. In English, we call that egg salad. Jews for generations have made egg salad. Here's the problem. One of the 39 violations of Shabbos, the melachot, is called lash. Lash means you take flour, you take water, and you combine them into a paste. So I like to make kishke on Friday, vegetarian kishke, Adele. I'm not that crazy to kill myself. Vegetarian kishke. I combine, in my case, spelt, because I'm trying to be healthy, and water and other ingredients, and it becomes a paste, and then you put it in the chillin, and you have yourself the kishke on Shabbos when the chillin's ready. Comes along Rav Shlomo Zalman and says, but the Jews made egg salad, not Friday like I did, on Shabbos, and they were demanding, they're combining eggs and all the other ingredients into one paste. This is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's answer. After going through halachic considerations, he says as follows. She'en la'ar ero aminhar cha'ya nahul gamezel harvei migdolea torah v'hayim'a. Do me a favor, don't question a minhag that so many great rabbis who cared about Judaism have done. That's what it says in a book called Shmirat Shabbat Hilchata, a halachic book on keeping Shabbos. In a biography about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach called Ba'aleihu Lo Yibol, it's even more sharper. Atayodea Rama Zeh Mutar, you know why it's okay? Ki kacha sabta sheli nahaga, because my grandmother made egg salad on Shabbos. My mother did so. Therefore, it must be permissible. Wait a minute. I have to explain to you why halachically it's okay. Even if my justification sounds weak.
This is about the size of the Kiddush cup in a mimetic tradition.
Say it again. You're quoting a great article by Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, yeah. The Mimetic Tradition, and you tell the story, because that's a great story. It's this Kiddush Cup story.
Yes, it's
five, 5 minutes.
You tell it without me.
The Kiddush Cup story goes as follows. There was a woman that lived in Yerushalayim that didn't want to make Kiddush for herself. A woman's obligated in Kiddush, but many women from the old country didn't feel comfortable to do it themselves. So she asked that in the yeshiva across the street, the boy would come and make kiddush for her. So every Friday night, they sent the boy to make kiddush, a beautiful thing to do to help a woman that's now, unfortunately, an almanah. which in English is a widow. One Friday night, a boy comes in. He's a yeshiva bacher. He just learned the code of Jewish law about the laws of Kiddush. And she gave the boy the Kiddush cup. And he looked at the Kiddush cup and he said, "No, no, no, you can't use this Kiddush cup. This Kiddush cup is too small. You need to have more wine in it when you make Kiddush." The woman looked at him and said, "Oh, that's funny. This was the Kiddush cup of my father." "Oh, yeah? Who's your father?" "Thank you, the father." "Oh, some Joe Schmoll from the street. My father was the Chafetz Chaim. My father was the Mishnah Brura. He used this Kiddush cup every Friday night." So that was the story with the Kiddush cup. I just heard a story with the same story regarding something else. In the Mishnah Brura, he says, on Friday night you have two challahs. Which one do you cut? The bottom one. On Shabbos morning you have two challahs. Which one do you cut? The top one. This is what he says. Someone was in the Chafetz Chaim's house for Shabbos, and he didn't do that. So he asked him, "But you just wrote in your book." He goes, "Yes, that's the halacha. But what can I do? That's not the way my father did it." What do we learn from this? If the Jewish people are doing it, we have to trust the healthy intuition of the Jewish people. The Jewish people are the best arbiters of Jewish law. They're the ones that practice Jewish law. They're the ones that keep the law in the books. So there could be, there was a very good reason out there why the law is not like the books. And both Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, you know why it's okay? Because the Jewish people are doing it. And allow me to end with the most scariest story to illustrate my point. This is a story that you have to be very careful when you tell the story. But everyone here is adults, and no one's looking, so we can tell the story. Okay? In the movie industry, they would call this an R-rated story. Rav Moshe Isserlish, known as the Ramah, that we already said, don't ever cancel a custom, came to the city of Krakow to be the rabbi. Have you been to Krakow?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've seen the Ramah Shul in a set, right? Oh, last week I posted it about this. This is your site online. You ready for this? The Ramah comes to Krakow and he sees a terrible thing. On the day after a woman went to mikvah, the woman who was in the mikvah, the mikvah lady, is there a term for it in the UK? In Hebrew, they call it a balanit.
The mikvah lady.
So the mikvah lady would tell her husband who came to mikvah. The husband would write it down on a piece of paper, and the next morning, during Shacharis, he would go up to every husband whose wife went to mikvah and say, "Mazel tov. Mazel tov." The Ramah saw this and went ballistic. First of all, modesty. Everyone knows when the other person is having marital relations with their wife. Number two, the Gemara itself says, "Arur shochev kol beima." You shall be cursed if you sleep with an animal, says the Ramah. Excuse me, says the Gemara. That means when people know when the other person is having marital relations. So they're violating Jewish law. And he made an announcement, told the Gabbai, "Stop saying Mazel Tov." Rabbi, listen to the rabbi. A miracle. A miracle. Well, there was a man, John, that didn't live in the community full time. He was what we call today a commuter. He's a frequent flyer. And he wasn't home for like 2-3 months. And he finally came home, and he was with his wife. And the next morning, he went to shul, and the rabbi didn't tell him Mazel Tov. So he was a little upset. So he went up to the rabbi and said, "Hey, why don't you tell me Mazel Tov?" And the rabbi told him two things. Number one, the Ramah canceled the minhag. And number two, your wife hasn't been to mikvah in months.
Oof.
What do you mean? She told me she went. She was lying to you. She hasn't been there in months. The Ramah heard this and immediately not only put back the minhag, he never canceled another minhag in his life. If you look at the Ramah, the code of Jewish law, if I can sum up what he does, all he's doing is justifying Ashkenazic minhagim, mentioning them and justifying them. From duchening on yontif only to many, many, many other things that Ashkenazic Jewry does, because he saw that there was a minhag, looked like it violated Jewish law, but it actually enhanced family purity. And me, Mr. Ramah, came along and tarnished it and heard it by quote-unquote keeping Jewish law. So we saw today that from time immemorial there was always clashes between the written law and the way the Jewish people actually keep the law. And we saw two very basic ways to deal with it. Number one, either tell them that the law and the books prevail and what you're doing is wrong, or vice versa. Assume that what you're doing is right, and therefore you have to justify it, you find a way to justify it. There's no question in my mind that the Ashkenazic way of dealing with things was to say that custom is correct, and if anything, we have to question what it says in the books. So therefore, I advise everyone, if you come to a community and you see something strange, I mean very strange, first of all, drink water. Second of all, drink another cup of water. Thirdly, don't say a word. Go home, go to Google, go to any search engine, consult with rabbis, and then, and only then, can you come out and say this minhag is wrong. Because usually you will find a justification for it. And allow me to end with the following story that happened to me. I was in Krakow, in the Ramaz town, and I was in the Ramaz grave, and then I came back to a rabbinic conference. It was winter, 3:54 o'clock, there's always someone that points to their watch and says, mincha, mincha, mincha. It's getting closer to sunset, mincha, 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 mincha. Finally, 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 you're welcome to come in. Finally,
I'll wait till you've come to the next one.
Oh, no, you can sit down, we're about to start. The Ramah, shul, finally someone said, it's already 5 minutes to sunset. Got up. A man who I'm privileged to work with today, Rav David Stott, and said, I don't understand. You're in the town of the Ramah. We just came back from the Ramah's grave. You know what the Ramah says in the Code of Jewish Law about Mincha? That you can have Mincha until it's dark. And everyone here gets up and says, sunset, sunset, sunset. Ladies and gentlemen, if the Jewish people do it, assume it's correct. There's always going to be a justification somewhere. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Okay, the next class is going to be about something totally different. If you'd like to stay, if not, there's other classes happening.